Thank you, Bob. I'm Bub Brant, an alcoholic. My legal name is Harry, but we won't go into that. I want to thank Milton for asking me to speak, and I want to tell George how much I enjoyed his talk and getting to know he and John this weekend, and my wife's talk, as usual, was beautiful, and y'all sure look good this morning. Now, I'm a little nervous. I don't talk that often, maybe a couple times a year. But I guess if I stick to my story, I won't lose my place, huh? Like Bob said, I'm from Leland, Mississippi. I work right where I grew up. I drank there, got sober there. Don't get out of town much, so this is a real treat to come up here. Mostly just ride around dirt roads, you know. This really is a beautiful conference, y'all. I mean, this site, this location, this facility, I just love it. The mountains are so scenic, and I've got kinfolk up here I hadn't seen in a long time, and I hadn't been here in 30 years, in fact. I have a cousin who works at Suwannee. He took us on the grand tour Saturday, and this afternoon I'll go up and we'll spend the night with my uncle, who's my father's brother, and so we'll make a nice tour out of it, a family event, and getting to know you all is great. Y'all know how to put on a roundup. I mean, it's relaxed and comfortable, and everybody gets to know each other. That's super. I mean, it really is. I think this, you ought to put a stamp on it, you know, and make the other roundups. Y'all, hey, come on, schedule a nap, you know. Give us a break. You know. I grew up in a fairly normal environment, I suppose. Farming family, this thing's a little hot. Yeah. I'll speak up, and you don't have to do that. But like George was saying, you know, there was parties at the house, and you know, they all drank, played music, and had fun, and I, you know, associated that with drinking, and that's, you know, sure, that's what people do, you know. They drink, and they have fun. So I grew up, I played sports in high school, and did fairly well with that, and didn't even drink, I don't think, until I was probably 17, 16, and when I did, I mean, it didn't take me long. I flipped a truck, you know, right after I had the first time with some beer, and trouble started right out of the box. I dated the minister's daughter, and she liked Tanqueray, so I got into gin, you know, when I was about 18, and kind of, you know, I was pretty level, though, and I got to college, and it started taking off pretty good. I mean, I had a bicycle, and I'd get a couple of bottles at Boone's, you know, Apple Farm, and that's how I went to college. I rode around and drank wine out of the basket of that bicycle. And then I discovered Dixie beer and crawfish, and I was at LSU. Don't ask me why. I really don't know. I couldn't tell you. But it was a great place to learn how to drink. I mean, they partied down. They walked to town barefoot down there. I mean, they, you know, and party all week. You set the baby on the table and pass a pitcher of beer around, you know. They go to town down there. And I fell right in with it and lapped it up, loved it. And, of course, school was sort of a secondary thing. And my dad dropped me off and told me to be a lawyer, and I entered art school. So I never did what I was told, you know, just a little hard-headed. But after a few years there, I went back, got involved with the family farm. I mean, I knew I wasn't much good out there in the real world, and I knew I needed my family to kind of, you know, cover for me. I was playing in bands while I was in school, and I'd be out there, and I'd get on these gigs, you know, and I'd be so drunk, you know, and the Dixie beer representative one time gave us 12 cases of quartz because we were such good advertising promotion for his band, because the amps were lined with beer cans, you know, and But anyway, I started farming with the family. They reluctantly, included me in that, and because by then I was already pretty drinky poo. I'd get drunk and stay that way. But anyway, I started farming with them, and it wasn't long after that I met a lady got married. She's a nice lady. We were not suited for each other, except in one regard. She was a teetotaler, and I needed a good chauffeur, and so that worked out pretty good. But we had a couple of daughters, and my drinking was getting strong. We'd go to these parties, and everybody else would have a casual few and have a good time just like you're supposed to, and I'd have first one might be casual halfway through it, and then bam, man, I was knocking them down and I was under the table, and this kept happening. And so, we had to cut out the socializing because I just wasn't going to work, with that. I wouldn't drink during the day. Farming's pretty rugged stuff, and so I'd wait till late in the afternoon and start having a few beers down at the local country store. The farmers all hang out at the country store and drink beer and until it closes, and sometimes they'd make it home, sometimes not. I didn't have any trouble with the law at that point, but I was just, the alcoholism was getting so much stronger. I mean, once I took a drink, off to the races, and I might be running drunk in the bars till they closed at 1 or 2 in the morning, and I'd get up and try to go to work, and I might be there on time, but I was just so soaked, that it'd take me, I'd go find a tree or something and kind of, lay out for an hour or two and try to come to, But I was there, And my brother and my father were business partners, and I'm the only alcoholic in my immediate family, but I had some great caretakers, my dad and my brother both. I mean, they got where they just were sick with covering for me. I mean, they loved it, even in sobriety, I learned how to use that. I just act like I'm going to do something. They run ahead of me and do it so I won't screw it up, I got where I could use that very well. It still works today, as a matter of fact. Brother, don't know what hit him, man. I'm going to do this. there you go. I started getting abusive verbally to my wife and just drunk, and nobody would do it my way, and I was yelling matches with my dad, and me and my brother sort of got along because we were co-conspirators and we deemed him the evil god, and so we were, we had a common thread, I guess. But family farms are tough, man. I mean, that's hard work, and there's a lot going on. There's a lot at stake, and that farm had been in the family 100 or so years, and he was very proud of that. I guess he wasn't. We were, I guess. I am now, because it's getting rarer and rarer. But at any rate, my wife finally got wise and left and took those two little kids. And they were, the oldest one was 5. In fact, it was my oldest daughter's 5th birthday that she took the kids and split and told me I was not invited to the party. and we got divorced, and she cited my alcoholism as the reason for it. And, total denial, I guess you could call it denial. Delusion is what the big book says it is. I lived in a delusion. I was no way I was going to look at my drinking as a problem. But, divorce went okay for a while. And then, I got a DUI. Okay, well, you can't drive. You can't see your kids no more. I said, whoa, where'd this come from, And still not willing to look at it. Well, maybe you can see them if your mom picks them up and 2 hours once a month on Sunday if she's there, this kind of thing, And her and her mom got sick with, let's hide the kids from him, And, it was nasty, And I love those two little girls. And this was when I started coming apart, really. I was drinking in the bars and out running hard, I knew the other farmers didn't want much to do with me. I mean, we'd go hunting or something like that, and I'd end up throwing the cards up and shooting them with a shotgun. You know, hey, get the heck away from me. None of that fishing and hunting, but this is hunting and fishing paradise down there in the Mississippi Delta, you know. Not that I care that much for it, but it was way beyond just that. I mean, you know, if I'd come in a country store or something, you know, if they everybody's getting leery of me, because old Bub, he'd get kind of wild, you know. And I'd walk up to a bunch of guys, and they'd all walk off, this kind of thing. You know, all this was starting to happen. And I got, the little bitty town like that, the cops, they take good care of you. I mean, you're drunk, you run off the road, they take you home, that kind of stuff, you know. So that happened several times. And then they started taking me in. And the chief, you know, he'd get those tickets, you know, and said, well, it's happened this time, next time, don't let it happen. He put them tickets in his desk drawer there, you know. And he had two DUIs of mine in his desk drawer when I got sober. And I had two more in Greenville where they don't play. They will throw you in the can. And if you do it again, it might beat you up. And I was, ain't no might to it. They were going to beat me up the last night I got drunk. But I beat a couple of them up, you know. I got a theory. Your last drunk contains all your character defects. You just look at that one night, you know, there. they are there. I was standing in a bar, and, you know, like I said, I used to play in bands. Well, of course, I let that go years ago. You know, I'd get drunk on stage, you know, just pretty obnoxious drunk, you know. I'd see a band, and I'd come charge the stage and try to take over, that kind of junk. You know, just. But anyway, this band was on break. This is my last drunk, last night on the town, I'll say. Standing in front of the bandstand, rocking back and forth, you know, obviously cooked to the gills. And this policeman walks up to me, and he's a real short guy. He comes up about right here, you know. He's got his uniform on. He says, "You're drunk." I said, "Let me tell you something." He started to grab me. I said, no, let me tell you something. I went to Disney World one time, and then he really started to grab me, you know. I said, "I went to Disney World, and down there the guards got these badges, and they got a globe with ears on it. You ought to get you one of them little Mickey Mouse badges. Go with that little Mickey Mouse uniform you got on." There was about five plain clothesmen in there, and they towed me out of that door like a coffin. I can find a drink. How about that? Well, I mentioned my kids, and I was really despondent about the whole thing, and I can remember. After I lost my driver's license, I'd ride around town on a bicycle, and I'm riding around Leland, little one-horse town, right on a bicycle. That's how I used to drink. I'd go out on town on a bicycle, man, you know, and go down to the pool hall, and if I left it in the alley, who cared? You know, I'd go back and get it and catch a ride or something. But I was riding around on a bicycle, and I think I was sober a few weeks when this happened. And my ex-mother-in-law's brand-new Lincoln drives by, and my two little kids in the back seat waving at me, you know. Ooh. Talk about not living up to your potential, you know. That hurt. But after the bout with Mickey Mouse there, I had to go to a lawyer because there was some other things going on, some federal charges against me, and, you know, and I had, you know, this stack of DUIs, and I'd done the weekends in jail and, you know, the driving school and all that stuff, and been in quite a few weekends in jail. In fact, one time I was in jail down there, and I took Carl Jung with me. Now, I'm not an intellectual, you know, but I'm laying up in the jail reading Carl Jung. Now, this is a smart guy, right? In jail reading Carl Jung. Well, anyway, that last drunk landed me in, it was a nut ward, is what it was. Actually, They the doctor said, well, this A&D unit will screw up your insurance, so I'm going to put you in with the nuts, you know. Well, all the nuts were getting dope, you know, and I wasn't, you know, but there I was anyway. And there was a sober member of AA who was in there for depression. He'd been sober 4 years, and you know, we got to talking, and the guy did a beautiful 12-step job on me. You know, he explained the resentment to me. He said, you ever have resentments? I said, I don't know what that is, you know. Hate, you know, that's a good old country word. I understand that, you know. But he explained his resentment to me. He said, I'll give you an example of resentment. This is two guys in a nut ward. We're both patients, right? And he's trying to talk me into AA. And I'm not listening to these doctors, you know, I'm paying out to Wazoo. I'm listening to this drunk. He says, you know, my drinking got me in a lot of hot water, and it caused my marriage to break up. My wife threw me out, and she took up with another fellow. Now, I just added on to my house, and I'd put this big den out there, and I put a big fireplace in it, and I just had a cord of wood cut and stacked outside. And here she was, took up with another fella, and I'd go by that house, you know, and I'd see that smoke curling up out of there, and I'd think, ooh, he's in there burning my wood. Yeah, it happened to me all the time, yeah. So anyway, this guy, he commandeered a car and a driver, and they took us down to some AA meetings, and I got started going to AA. I told the shrink, I said, you know, I've discovered something that might help me. You know, I guess I had this kind of, I had to think I discovered AA, you know, some way out, you know, that nobody else knew about, you know, and big secret. And anyway, I'll give you an example of my caretakers, how my family was. They called me while I was in the nut house and said, hey, we're going in the fish business. We're going to borrow $1 million. You want in? What's wrong with this picture, you know? Yeah, you know. Ask somebody in the mental ward if he wants to borrow $1 million. That'll work. Well, at any rate, I got out, and, you know, I'm not real superstitious thing, but they took me straight from the nut house to the office and said, you got to sign these papers, you know. And I've been in the nut house for about, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. And I said, look, I ain't seen my house. I don't know what's there. I don't know what y'all have done. I'm going to go home and see what's going on. I don't know what I'm signing, you know. What do you, you know, I said, I ain't signing nothing. Take me home. And I went home, and there was a long black snake laying right across the threshold of my door. I swear it was. And being a rice farmer, I, you know, took a shovel and dispatched him right away. And my friends had heard I got out, you know, and they called up and brought over the beer and everything. You're going to celebrate, you know. And I told them, I said, something's happened. I'm through. See, in that nut ward, that guy that 12-stepped me, he told me something, and I tried it, and it worked. He said, well, what do I do to stay sober? He said, ask God to help you stay sober and help you to change. And I did. In the nut ward on my knees in my little room there, I did that, And I had a sensation that something had happened, and I don't know what it was. But here my friends were with all the beer and everything. Hey, you're out of the joint, you know. And I said, something's happened. I'm not going to drink. In fact, I think I'm going to quit drinking. They said, well, you need to. I was sober about 4 months, and I was in the pool hall getting a sandwich, and the town drunk was in there, you know, and he and I used to drink together. He took my place as the town drunk, and he was up there trying to get a beer. This is in lunchtime, you know, and he said, no, you ain't paid your bill. Your credit's no good. You can't have a beer. Get out of here, you know. I said, put his beer on my tab. You know, I'm sober overall. I'm Mr. AA, you know. And he brings his beer over and sits down with me and says, thanks. I said, you're welcome. I said, you know, you ought to straighten your life out and get sober like me. He said, if I ever get bad as you, I will. That guy ain't sober yet. Guess he never got bad as me. But I started going to meetings and got involved with home group. And I really didn't know what to make of y'all. You know, I knew you were not drinking. I knew you were living, and you were fairly contented life in varying degrees. You know, and I didn't understand that, and I didn't know why. But I knew something was going on here, and it was the only alternative I was faced with. I mean, the trouble I'd gotten into, I was looking at time. I'm big time. You know, I'd fooled around some stuff I shouldn't have fooled around with, and. There was a pre-trial intervention program down there, and I went down there and told that lady, I said, well, what are you going to do? You got to do something to repay society for your wrongs. I said, well, I'm going to AA, and I'm helping recovering alcoholics. Now, this is all of 2 weeks sober, right? Yeah. 2 months sober, sorry. But she bought it, and all the charges disappeared, and never went to court or anything, you know. All that just disappeared. I kept going to AA, and I had a good friend who was there. In fact, this trip up here has had a little bit to do with him. He took me to one meeting in like 76 or something like that, and I remember, you know, hearing something about turn your life over to God, and that was really about all that hit me. And I went to the church and got baptized, and the Sunday school kept me sober a few weeks, and I, you know, right back at it. But that guy's father brought me up here in high school to see if I could play football at Swanee, and they've named the football field after him up here, Umphrus McGee Field, and he was one of the founders of our home group. In fact, I saw Umphrus McGee Jr. get a 20-year chip the other night, which is a treat. He and his brother, they have a whole family pew in our home group. There's a bunch of them. It runs rampant in that family. You know, I tell you, I had trouble with my dad, and it was about this time that I really stopped fighting, you know, with people, and he died a few years ago. Let me tell you, when he died, we were okay. We were good. But we fought for years. And in fact, he was my biggest resentment. When I was at the end of my drinking, I was carrying around a gun because I was paranoid. I mean, you know, an evening in my house consisted of me checking to make sure my gun was loaded, looking out the window to see who was coming, you know. And I mean, I was nuts. I really was. People didn't fool with me. You know, they knew to stay away, and I liked it that way. You know, I promoted that. I wanted you to think I was crazy so you get the heck away from me, you know. But like I said, my dad died a few years ago, and this is his tie. And I wore it because the year before he died, I was area chairman, and he and my mom's 50th anniversary. We all went to a restaurant, and we were talking about that. And he said, I sure would like to see you chair one of those meetings. Well, he never did. He died a year later. But he was real proud of my sobriety. He was. And I found that out right before he died. I really didn't. We had some real strong time together. I don't want to skip too far ahead, but I need to tell this. He just got sick one day, and they sent him to the hospital, and they said, well, you got to have an operation. So they helicoptered him up to Memphis, and we're going to work on some aneurysms, and ended up he had cancer, and they gave him a short period of time to live. And he went to Jacksonville, Florida, to Macy's to get in line for some tests, and he was up there waiting. My uncle, who I'm going to see this afternoon, was down there with him. I got this call. It said, you got to get down here. I can't stay here. That's my uncle called me. And I just had a crop of rice planted coming up. We had a 4-inch rain that night, which, I mean, you got levees out there, you know, the thing is flooded. Everything's underwater. And it was a mess. You know, I really had to turn this over. This is about 3 years ago, like I said. I went to my office, and the office had 6 inches of water in it, you know. Oh, man, everything was a mess. But I knew I had to go. So I went to Jackson. They said, you got to pay full fare. So it cost me $1,000, you know. But I had to do it. You know, I don't know why. I knew I had to do it. But I got down there finally in Jacksonville, and he was glad I was there. I called back home, you know. My brother was a total jerk. You know, it's too bad, you know, your rice levees are all busted. Ha, ha, you know. So I was thinking about, well, maybe I made a bad decision. You know, I really didn't know. And I knew I had to find AA quick. So I found AA Clubhouse, and the guy speaking, I knew the guy. And that isn't phenomenal. He was down there on business. He was from Little Rock, and I'd met him. But there was an old guy there. I just grabbed some guy. I said, look, I need to talk to somebody. And turned out he was a Jesuit priest with 30 years sobriety. Father Bob was his name. He took me to dinner. He got a friend. He said, look, you're in a tough time. You're in a tight spot, and we know that. And one of us is going to meet you every day for a meeting. And they did. It was a different place every day. They'd tell me where to go and what time, and they met me there. And when I see somebody new in AA or somebody out of place, not new, but somebody who's from somewhere else, you know, I think about what AA meant to me there in Jacksonville, Florida. Those guys, they saved my bacon. And he told me, he said, this is a real important time with you and your father. And it turned out to be tremendously important. He made amends to me. I had made amends to him years ago and tried to live that out, to stop fighting with him. And I'd gotten where, yeah, whatever you say, you know, if I might do it, I might not, but I just wouldn't fight with him, you know. And it turned out to be a really beautiful ending there. But like I said, I have jumped way ahead in my story. I was elected GSR when I was 2 years sober. And I hadn't been out of town in years. I've been riding the bicycle around. I've got my driver's license back, you know, but you had the assembly was on the Gulf Coast, you know, and y'all sent me to the coast. Man, I couldn't believe this. Y'all going to pay my way to go to the beach, and I ain't been out of town in 5 or 6 years, you know. My first report to the group was, thanks for the trip to the beach. And I got involved in all that, and that's been great fun. It really is. I know y'all are all, if you're here, you know what it means to be involved in. But I got involved in service work right away, and I'm still with it. I'm still at Area Assembly. The friend I had, whose father this field is named after, he was my first sponsor. He had me working on the first three steps, and I couldn't get my teeth into it. I couldn't see the need for it, you know, why I do that, you know, and I fell in love, really. I thought I did. I fell in heat, really, and with this girl who had about 4 years sobriety, I thought, this is great. Well, I'll just pal around with her and see if this stuff rubs off, you know. Well, you know, it didn't last, but, you know, the emotional pain I was going through after that showed me that I didn't have a thing to pull on, and y'all were not enough. You know, I had no spiritual program going at all. And so I try to practice a little tolerance with the he and the she, and sometimes you never know what it's going to lead to. With me, it led to me actually having to work the steps. I just started talking to other guys, you know, who'd been sober, find out what they did, and I called my minister up, and we did the third step, and in the next few weeks I wrote the fourth step, and I called him again, did a fifth step. About that time, I was coming up on a year of sobriety. I went to see some friends in AA in Little Rock, and they took me to a meeting, and that was about the time I met Darla. We dated for a few years, long distance, sober, in the fishbowl, like she said, you know. Everybody knows, you know. And I met Chick, who is my sponsor still. And that's been 16 years ago. He's still my sponsor. I talk to him once a week. In fact, I called him last week, and I told him, hey, I'm going to be speaking at Mount Eagle. He said, you going to tell the truth? I said, no. He said, good. Yeah. told George the only lie he told last night was that when he said he wasn't a speaker. If he ain't a speaker, I ain't never heard one. But I am kind of jumping all over the place, but I got a check from my sponsor right in time for me to start making my amends. And the sponsor I had, my friend, he was an old friend, was a close friend, and, you know, his sponsor never took him past the fifth step. He's still sober. He's got 25 years now. But I knew that you know, I just couldn't piecemeal, you know. I didn't want to half this thing. I knew that it wasn't going to work for me. I was just too sick. You know, maybe I was sicker than he was. I don't know. Even though I think he's still the worst drunk I ever saw. He and I drank together, but we have little group discussions about that every now and then. Who's the worst drunk in Leland, you know? You were. No, you were. But Chick had me make this list, and I started going up to Little Rock, and we'd sit down and meet for coffee and talk, and this went on for months. You know, finally I said, look, man, what about this fifth step I got? He said, well, it was an eight-step list, actually. And finally he sat down with me, and he helped me get it in order, the ones that didn't need making and the ones that did, and what I needed generally to say, you know, when I did those, and I started doing the deal, praying about them. And let me tell you, I had some out-of-this-world experiences with making amends that really nailed my feet to the floors of AA. I mean, I knew God was involved in my life and wanted to be. And that had never happened to me before. I had a naked statue that I like to stick in the front window of my house, you know. It's this big, tall plaster statue. Very nice-looking statue, you know. But, you know, it was a little embarrassing for the neighbors. But anyway... I was riding around with this pal of mine. I'm sponsoring this guy now. We were drinking, you know, and I said, hey, you see my statue in the window? He said, no. So I backed up and backed into my neighbor's truck. He had this vintage truck sitting on the street, you know, and I zipped up in the driveway and cut out the lights, and the next day he asked me, what happened to my truck? I said, I don't know, man. I didn't. He said, you didn't hear anything. No, you know, I lied about the guy's truck. Well, years later, I'm making amends. This guy moved away years ago. And I'm on my knees praying about this guy and what I did wrong and what I need to do to make it right. And I don't know where this guy is, where he moved to, nothing. And I looked up and he's standing on the street corner across the street. And I went over and I said to him, I need to talk to you over here. Well, you know, he lived across the street from me for a long time, you know. So he said, I'll be over in a minute, you know. So he did. He came over in a minute, and I said to him, I said, look, I backed into a truck, you know, years ago. I know I banged it up, and I want to pay for it and apologize for that and having lied to you about it. I'm in AA now, and part of the program is straightening out our past, and so I need to do this for me, you know, and please let me make this right. And he did another kind of, you know. And he said... I don't want you to pay for anything. He said, but I got a brother that needs AA, and I think on what I've just seen, I'm going to recommend AA to him. And he walked away. That was just one thing, and maybe one of the more vivid ones, but I had things like that that were going on in my life during my second year, third year of sobriety. My third AA birthday, I still had my ex-in-laws on that list. Now, my sponsor had put them first on my amends list, and somehow they were the last ones on there. I don't know how that happened, but I made amends to everybody except them. And so my third AA birthday, I said, by golly, I'm not going down there and show off and get me a chip. I'm going to make this amend. And I went out there, called them up, and went out there and got that done. And I wished I had put them first, because there's... I think it might have helped me a little more, but right about this time in my sobriety, I was at a big book study. I was about 9 months sober. I got a license back. It was right before I went to Little Rock, and there was a little old lady there. Pauline was her name, and I was talking about my kids and how I missed them. I hadn't seen them. They wouldn't let me see them, you know. And she, after the meeting, walked over to me, and you know how little old ladies do. She grabbed your cheeks, you know, like this. You know? She said, honey, you go get those kids. You need them. And So I did. I went to see a lawyer, and he said, "Oh, we're going to do this." He sent him a letter and got visitation set up, and they had moved, you know, all the way across the state. But you know, by golly, I had my driver's license by then, and so every weekend I'd pick them up at 6 o'clock on Friday, and I'd have them back at 6 o'clock on Sunday, every other weekend. And we did that for years, me and my babies. And they are beautiful grown women today. I mean, I couldn't be more proud of them, and they are proud of me. And it just, it's disgusting, the love fest that goes on, you know. It really is. I want to grow up to be like them. They're great young people. My oldest daughter got married about a year ago to a terrific young guy, and I gave her away, you know. Very proud of her. Somebody was telling me about, Rose talking about your granddaughter making all those awards. My God, this kid, she was valedictorian in the school. She won an award for this, won an award for, you know, just one award right after another. Went to college, graduated with honors in chemistry. In med school, she's since decided that she flunked out. Now she's baking cookies, but, you know, I love her, you know. I told her last weekend, I think it was, I said, "Honey, I love you more for what you are, way more for anything you could ever do." My other daughter, she got a scholarship to go to Mississippi College, and she just graduated there and got her a good job, an apartment there in Jackson. They both live in Jackson, and they're looking after each other and living life large. They're great. And let's see how far in and out of this I can jump. I can make it as confusing as possible, but I was telling George, everything I've done in AA worked like magic. It really has. I went to a roundup that Darla's sponsor's husband started. And I said, "How'd you do that?" He said, "Well, I went to the district." I said, "Let's have a roundup." And they said, "Okay." So I went to the district. I said, "Let's have a roundup." I said, "Okay." Everybody come up with some money and some coffee and people and got a place. And that's Delta Roundup's in its 11th year now. I'm just like magic. I mean, I didn't even have to, you know, no effort at all. Just, hey, let's do this, you know. And at Area Assembly, guy asked me to be the newsletter chairman. Well, man, I took that job and ran with it. I loved it. I became a publisher, you know. I mean, your label had your group number on it. And to make matters worse, that's when they changed the group numbers. I had to go ahead and change them all. I got them, though, you know. I did such a good job, they made me the treasurer. And if that ain't a drunk's dream, it checks in the mail every day. Yeah, that. There's a lot of humility in service work. I was patting myself on the back while opening checks to Bub Branton, you know. "Oh, look at this. What great work I'm doing for AA. I'm really, you know, I'm super, you know." And I caught myself, did a 7-step, "God, remove this pride." And the next check I opened, the guy had said payable to the order, and he had abbreviated Area Assembly to say payable to the order of the area ass. I got it. I gave those checks to the cashier. She's flipping through there. It comes to that. When she looks at it, she looks at me. I said, "Yeah, I know." Yeah. And then they made me chairman, and that was a blast. I mean, it really was. I hate working with motels and all the detail work, but just working with the alcoholics and committees and conducting assemblies and stuff, that was more fun. Then I was alternate delegate. My term ended in January. I didn't leave my name up. Didn't have the family support that the service manual says I needed. And it worked out for the best, because in January I had some heart trouble. I'll tell you, I was in bands. We had a New Year's party, and I was at the microphone playing the dance for New Year's, you know, man, everything's rocking, feeling good. Man, it starts hitting me like a ton. I couldn't breathe, you know. And I was having heart trouble and didn't know it. I thought it was anxiety or something, you know, I didn't know. And it happened again the next day. I went to the doctor. They slammed me in the hospital, stuck some stents in me. And I come to, and there's my lovely wife and two daughters and son-in-law in ICU standing there, the sun shining in. I thought, well, I'll be. Man, this is like Christmas Day. I mean, you know, they're there at 6 in the morning. They live 2 hours away, you know. And then I found out the waiting room is full of people. AAs, mostly. A few Al-Anons, some friends, family. I started crying. My preacher come in to see me. I said, man, people care about me? He kissed me on the forehead. He said, God loves you. And it really grabbed me, really did. To back up, when my dad died, I was area chairman, and I got cards and letters from groups, whole groups signed cards, sympathy cards, and sent them to me. AAs showed up at my mom's house, bunches of them. And another time I was overwhelmed, just overwhelmed with the love that AA can show. That and what I can learn about God in a deep time like that. I mean, I value family and friends in AA now more than ever before. I mean, those stupid thoughts, I don't need nobody. You know, that old alcoholic ego. Well, here's something that'll melt it, you know. Just to let your minds at ease, I'm not going to topple over a heart attack. I'm in good shape now. Thank you. I'm not about to keel over, you know. The doc put me on a diet, and I lost 30 pounds. Look, I've been praying, asked God to help me lose weight for years, but I didn't want to go that much trouble, you know. But life is good. I was on the phone talking to my sponsor the other day. I said, you know, that brother of mine, the one that, you know, I've been fussing, fighting with all my, you know, he really is getting sweet. He is getting better. I mean, we're just getting along. He started laughing at me. He said, dummy, you're getting better. 17 years. I don't usually get emotional, but I don't mind if you don't. I was grabbed by this morning. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Boy, if that ain't a saying. I would say that my story is one of complete recovery. My sponsor tells me that we have to maintain a certain level of immaturity, and I do my best to do that. We enjoy life. We have fun. We went to New Orleans a couple of weeks ago, and Darla had a realtor's convention, and her broker was a realtor, president of the Land Realtors Institute, I think is what it was, and they had a black tie party at the top of the Trade Center, and we were honored guests for that, along with some tycoons, and the guy sitting next to Darla was from Switzerland. He was a weird guy. He was a lot of fun. We had a great time. And this band, a bunch of guys that I play with occasionally, they came down and played for the party, and we just covered the French Quarter and went all over the place. The Doobie Brothers played Sunday night, and we stayed for that. I was far from here to the door back there, but Doobie Brothers, man, we were juking to that, and just having more fun. Like I say, I've had a pretty tough year. That my delegate that I was alternate to dropped dead a month after the term was into. This was between my surgeries that happened. And he was in and out of the hospital the whole time I was alternate. And I just, you know, I always have to say I didn't enjoy being alternate delegate too much. You know, I had a lot of great jobs in AA, but that was not one of them. It was a tough go. But now I'm the finance chairman, so if anybody needs any money, come to Mississippi. Let's see what we can do. That's a lot of fun. The area's got too much money. And I've had to be creative. And look, the assembly's accepted it. And that's fun, you know. Hey, I got an idea. Okay, let's give away some stuff. Yeah, okay, you know. That started a fight down there almost. You know, he's going, what are you doing? You can't give away stuff. Service manuals? What are you going to give service manuals away? Oh, you can't do that. Can't give away service manuals? Why not? But you have too many service manuals out there. What then? You know? Alcoholics is so much fun. Hey, you know, they'll argue about it. Oh, there's a spot on the floor. No, it's not. You know? But it's all in love. And it's great to be involved. I see the same people, you know, you go to assemblies, go to conventions, and there they all are, you know. And the ones in service, they keep coming back. They're the ones you see for 17 years, 20 years, you know, I'm sure, I guess, I hope. And I've gotten close with them, working with them. I mean, we've got a website going. We've just, Mississippi ain't that far behind. We were like the third AA website online, I think, right behind Louisiana and somewhere else. Official area websites, you know, in the cyber world, which, you know, I'm a kind of a low-tech guy, you know. I'm not that bright with that kind of stuff. But we got her done, and it's up. Invite you to look at it. There's a full meeting list online, so if you want to find a meeting in Mississippi, go to aa-mississippi.org. Put in my plug for area assembly there. But it's probably the most amazing thing I've ever been in. When I was in high school, we had a football team, and we were undefeated. Now, we never had a winning season until I got to be a senior, and something happened, and it all clicked, and everybody was pulling for everybody else, and it was just great. The feeling of the whole school was great. It was just great. And this is the closest thing I can come to, you know. What this is like is for me, was that feeling back then. How everybody's in this, pulling together. The unity of AA is what I'm alluding to, that this is one of the great movements of our time. And it is. It's a movement. And I'm so proud to be involved in it. And I want to thank y'all for having me here.